Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 24th. I'm Ray Graff. Are you selling? Are you buying? Are you in the market for a new home? Well, you'll want to turn the radio up within reason. Don't annoy the neighbors. Give us a call because we have two real estate professionals in the studio today to answer your questions. Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate and Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District are waiting for your questions. If you have a real estate question, 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well at voxpop@wamc.org, but the number is 800-348-2551. Renata, Alex, your call's coming up on a real estate edition of Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Are you buying or selling a home or residential property? If so, you're in luck. We have two real estate professionals in the studio to answer your questions today. Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is here. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. Renata Lewis is with Keller Williams Capital District, also leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She is a go-to source for real estate industry insight and advice and general optimism. Alex and Renata, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. We're excited. We're geared up for this.
Yes. Ready to go.
Take it as you said it. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. Real estate. What's new, Renata?
So I actually contacted a couple of my close lenders that I work with and just questioned them about interest rates because they have gone up a little bit, then they went back down, then they went back up. When do we lock in and all that good stuff?
Yeah.
So it looks like they're so the 30-year dropped to 3.5%, which is still a little bit higher than I've seen it. I've seen it as low as 3.37%.
Still pretty low.
It's still very low. 15-year remained at 3%. So I think we're still doing great on the interest rates, and I don't think there's any cause to worry.
The Fed cut rates again. Does that have anything to do with it in the long run?
It does eventually, but I don't think it really.
Yeah, actually, interesting. The Fed cut the rates, I think, last week, but rates are actually higher than they were about a month ago.
And what changes those rates?
Well, I think a lot of times the Fed is telegraphing what they're doing, so I think it's already baked in by the time they end up cutting it.
All right, fair enough. Alex, anything new you want to talk about?
I think we're seeing still a healthy market here in the Capital Region, and prices are up a little bit. I know pending sales and closed sales are down, but it's interesting that prices are still rising despite the fact that closed sales are falling a little bit.
Is that seasonal?
Well, this is compared to the same month last year.
To what do we attribute this?
I'm not sure. I think prices rising are a little bit a function of the lower interest rates than they were last year. So it increases the buyer's purchasing power.
I think it's very market specific, though, because I had a good conversation with an appraiser, and they had some type of a convention, and they had said that this is the first year on record, the biggest price adjustments that they've recorded. So
why would that be?
So
first of all, an appraiser's convention.
Price increases or
price adjustments, meaning going down.
Oh, interesting. Huh. I mean, appraiser's conventions must be extraordinarily exciting, right?
I'm sure.
People swinging from chandeliers. but to what would they attribute that? I mean, why?
So I usually say that they're about 2 months behind where the market is as far as their work. So I have a sister-in-law that does the appraisers. She's an appraiser. So she's usually like, where are you at? What's the market doing? Because she's usually 2 months behind on her reports. So what I'm seeing is the summer market where everything went up really high as far as the pricing. The sellers really wanted to maximize the value of their homes. Condition, I think, was a very big factor this year and possibly last year. So if the home wasn't in the perfect condition, I feel it suffered in this market, and it remained on the market longer than anticipated, which, you know, which eventually went into a price reduction mode.
Okay.
So that's just my prediction. And again, I think it's just different pocket areas. We really need to be careful how, you know, it's not a whole national thing.
Right.
But
well, we're not concerned nationally at this point.
Yes, no, just local.
And are we now about to head into what would be a slower time for real estate in this market? Cold weather months?
You know, we normally see an uptick in September. Things can be slow in July and August because I think people are taking more vacations. Usually we'll see an uptick in September as people want to make a move before the end of the year.
Right. What about October, November, December?
I think we're going to see. It's usually, for me, I see a spike in the last quarter of the season. I think tax benefits, somebody that wants to take advantage of the tax benefits by the end of the year. So I think the second home market may increase a little bit. And just overall, people just want to get in the house before the holidays. So even if they went into contract, you know, today or within the next few weeks, we're closing November, December.
Yeah.
So that's where we're seeing those numbers.
Renata Lewis is here. Alex Monticello. We talk real estate today on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. We start out with Stu in Dalton, Massachusetts. Stu.
Yes. I was wondering if I made a mistake. I have a uniquely old farmhouse that I turned into a maintenance-free painted lady, and realtors want to compare it with different, the same square footage. A friend of mine said the way he appraised his house was he had his insurance company, so I went with the insurance company's appraisal of my house. Was I wrong in doing that? Because I have a unique house. It's a maintenance-free painted lady with solar and as much green as possible. I was just wondering if I...
Could I ask you, Stu, and the realtors, maybe they know the answer, what's a maintenance-free painted lady, and how do I get one?
Well, it's completely... It's a maintenance-free painted lady. It's an old Victorian with five different colors.
Ah!
It's basically vinyl and aluminum, and I have... Believe me, it's totally unique.
Aha! Uh-huh. All right. Well, what do you think, experts?
Well, I've never heard of a painted lady, so I'm going to just guess a little bit on this one. I think the insurance...
A painted lady was back in the Victorian days.
Okay. I actually grew up in a Victorian, but I never really heard that phrase.
Mm.
So
I didn't think you were that old.
Yeah.
Oh, ouch. Okay.
Hey,
thank you, Alex.
Smack him.
All right.
So I'm predicting that the appraisal that you did through the insurance company is going to be very different than the appraisal for a market value. And that really is going to depend on what you tell your insurance company is inside. So they're not just insuring the home. They're insuring maybe everything that's inside. And, you know, how much you want to pay for it. So I think there's additional... bonuses that you could throw in into the insurance to help you gain the most if something was to happen to it.
Is there anything stopping Stu from getting an outside appraiser, even though insurance may have already done that?
Absolutely not. Do you still owe mortgage on the house or no?
No, it's scot-free right now.
Okay, good for you. So I would just call maybe a local realtor and say, hey, you know, who do you like as far as an appraiser? Who can I call? I'd like them to come in here and appraise my house. And this way, at least you have two opinions.
We did put a call in, and then we held off when I got the advice to go and check with the insurance because the house is that unique.
Right.
And the realtors that I was talking to, they just wanted to compare it with the same square footage comps, you know, and...
Right.
That just doesn't. It's too unique to do that.
The appraisers,
the realtor that we took got realized that right off the bat. She says we got to do something different here. That's the reason we picked her.
And that's a great question. Can you then, prior to the appraisal, talk to the appraiser and say, "Hey, look, here's why this is a unique house. Here's why this is different from the one right next door that has the same square footage." Can you make that conversation happen?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think, Stu, I think ultimately, I think what you'll find is the realtors may have a better pulse on the market, what the local trends and buyer preferences may be, versus an appraiser who covers maybe a much broader area. So if you can get somebody who really knows your local neighborhood or regional market, I think you'll get a more accurate, objective opinion from the actual real estate agents. And get three of them. You know, I always recommend talk to three different realtors. You can always average it together.
Yeah, I did talk to three different realtors. So I did that. I believe it or not, my neighbor who has a raised ranch, one day and it's gone, and it's a pretty good price you got.
Mm.
That's great.
And
that
does happen.
I was wondering, maybe I started too high with going with my insurance company. That's what I was.
Hmm. Well, listen, you could always adjust the price. You know, look to see what others have sold in the area. And I know they're not the same, but just watch the market carefully. You may want to look at other comparable homes outside of the area just to see what they've done. You know, we adjust in so many different ways.
Can I ask one more question, please?
Sure.
After a couple of weeks, I did drop it about $25,000. Did I do that too soon? And should I hang on to the price that I have right now? Or how long do you hold on to a price?
I think that's a hard question for us to answer. We don't know what the average days on the market is in your area, and you know how you know how much overpriced you may be if you are. So the adjustments, when we say we take an overpriced listing, which I don't like to do because it really does hurt the seller ultimately, but say we take an overpriced listing and then we want to adjust it, my adjustment is usually not just bringing it down to where we initially wanted it. You know, they'll know where my number was and I want to adjust it even below that because now we're following the market instead of leading the market. So you want to be in a position where you're going to be leading the market a little bit instead of just constantly following it because you may never catch up.
Okay. Hey, Stu, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much. Renata Lewis is here. Alex Monticello. It's Real Estate Today. 800-348-2551 is the number. We will be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551. The number. Renata Lewis is here. Alex Monticello is here. You are there. You call us. We'll answer your real estate questions. Let's go to Maureen in the Hudson Valley. Maureen, you're on.
Hi. We're in northern Orange County in the Hudson Valley, and we have an acre with a house, two bedroom, one bath, a ranch, live on grade, built around 1975. But attached to this parcel is two other parcels. They each have their own section blocked in lot, and one's a 3 acre and one's 13 acres. It's all on a private lane, so the only access to the land is through the right-of-way of the land. When I go to sell this, can I bundle it, and how does that work? That's my question.
So, yes, you could bundle it. But I think if you have three different parcels and those other two parcels might be buildable, it might be in your better interest to actually separate all three parcels out and sell them separately. It sounds like it might require, would they all have like a shared driveway?
Yeah.
Okay.
On the private lane.
Right.
So, the house has a driveway, and then once you get to the land, it's just land. And there's a stream you have to cross to get to the 13 acres.
Okay.
So,
yeah, you could
kind of like buildable, but with money.
You said it's not buildable?
It probably could be, but you got to build a bridge over the water because it is in a wetland.
Okay.
It will flood.
Yeah. So, what about the 1 acre lot? Is that buildable?
The 1 acre has a house on it. The 3 acres is buildable minimal. So.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe if you can, it sounds like you can't separate out the 13 acres, but if you could separate out the 3 acres, you might find that you could get better value by selling maybe the 1 acre with the ranch and the 13 acres as one bundle, and then the 3 acre buildable lot as its own separate parcel to sell.
Aren't there special rules about wetlands?
There are on wetlands. Yeah, you probably you can't build on wetlands, and so there's definitely restrictions there.
Yeah, they're protected.
Okay, so my question would be though, if I bundled it, like, do I set a price for all of it, and how, you know, because everything has a different assessed value.
Yeah, so so this is where. You don't want to just look at the assessed value that the tax assessor gives you. You really want to talk to a real estate professional to figure out how much value add those individual parcels, vacant parcels, add to the home. You know, the 13 acres, because it has stream and maybe additional land, maybe does add some value to the actual home.
I'm kind of looking like it could be like a mini estate. I mean, it's a lot of land, but obviously a small home.
Correct. Correct.
You know. Okay.
Yeah, and you know, so best thing you could do is you could compare it to similar homes, ranch style homes in your area that with 13 acres, and see what they're selling for, and talk to a real estate professional. They could give you some comparable homes that have sold in the last 6 to 12 months.
And is it commonplace to talk to 3 different realtors? I mean, you know, because you all of a sudden have a rapport with one, right? Or a friendship. And then I feel like, oh, if I go to another, you know, three different people.
You're stabbing somebody in the back.
I mean,
well, no, I think if you have one that you like and you trust and you think you're confident in their abilities, then yeah, absolutely. There's no need to talk to other ones.
Oh, I don't know if I really can or trust them, but, you know, I just feel like once you start sitting down with them, you know, there is a personal relationship.
Well, we're professionals. We understand that you're it's a business decision, right? So you're interviewing us. You're interviewing the real estate agent to hire you.
And maybe talk to some friends that you know.
And I can come right out and say that.
Yeah. And if you have...
Sorry.
Go ahead, Renata. Okay.
No, I was just going to say, if you have some friends that have used realtors in your area, maybe ask, you know, their opinion on, you know, what they liked, what they didn't, who they liked, who they worked with. Mm-hmm. And this way, it will just give you an idea of, you know, who to call and go from there.
Okay, great.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. 800-348-2551, the number. 1-800-348-2551. Real Estate Today, Alex Monticello, Renata Lewis, and Lillian in West Stockbridge. Hello, Lillian.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing well. So I have a question about the tiny house market. I'm interested in buying a piece of land in either Columbia County or the Berkshires and setting up a tiny house there. But I don't know anyone who's done that or what to kind of look out for or expect with that. And I wanted to know if any of you had experience in that kind of new emerging market.
So the only thing I really know about it is that the tiny house can be moved. So it's technically on wheels. So I don't think you can mortgage it.
You can't build a tiny house in, you know, on a foundation?
You can, but then I guess that would be the difference. Are you going to station it permanently and put it on a foundation so a bank can take a look at it and say, okay, you know, you can buy this land with this tiny house on it, or are you just buying a piece of land that you're going to park your tiny house on it and you can move it? So two different things to consider. So buying land is difficult to finance as well. Buying land a lot of times has to be cash. And, you know, does the land have any water on it, any septic systems? You know, maybe you wouldn't need it because of the house. Yeah, I guess I think you would need to do a little bit more research. Is this going to be a permanent location for you? Is this going to be just kind of like a stopover? And what your goals are and how long you want to be there. Anything else, Alex?
Yeah, Lillian, what are you going to use? Are you going to use it for your primary residence or vacation property?
Yeah, so I'm interested in having kind of an off-grid setting, but the logistics of kind of taking an existing facility and changing that is really cost intensive for the septic, for the water, for the energy, and it's not necessarily legal. So I think that this is a way I'm looking to kind of set myself up for extended living and have it also be off the grid and, you know, kind of sustainable.
And is it going to be your primary residence or is it going to be like a second home?
Yes.
Okay.
Primary residence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, if it's your primary residence and that's how you want to live, then, you know, if you can make the numbers work, it probably makes sense to do it. Your question, I don't know if you were asking about resale value. You asked about the tiny
home.
A
little bit, yeah.
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 You know, I think if you build a nice home, even if it's small in a nice location, I think that, you know, there will be a market for it. But you can always, you might want to talk to other realtors to figure out what similar sized homes are selling for, so you don't overbuild, right? So if those tiny homes in that market are selling for $200,000 and it's going to cost you $400,000 to make this investment, then, you know, you be aware that you're going to be making a big investment, that you're not going to get that money back.
Right. Okay.
All right. How many?
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
How many square feet, Lillian?
Probably 200, 300, 400, somewhere around there.
Yeah, they're tiny.
Did you see that Amazon is now selling these houses?
No, I did not.
For $160,000. Yeah, I don't know where you're looking, Lillian.
That's crazy.
So they're almost considered like modular homes, which is nothing. There's nothing wrong with a modular home. It's, you know, the type of heating that you're going to put in there. Is it going to be all solar? So there's a lot of, you know, angles that you need to consider and, you know, talk to somebody in the local area where you want to establish this. You know, what kind of value, if there is any, and honestly, the value is to you, you're going to be living there and you're going to be enjoying this tiny home. So you'll always be able to sell the tiny home on itself, by itself. You know, just be careful where you position it and where you take it to, just to make sure you don't get hurt on the land piece. You could always lease land as well until you learn more information and figure out where you want to be.
Well, Lillian, good luck. Thank you for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Tiny homes. I think that might be the first time on this program.
Amazon Prime.
We have actually talked about tiny homes.
I agree.
Either one of you sold one?
Nope.
I did know somebody that was building one.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was going to just kind of trailer it and just kind of, you know, travel the world with it.
No, we have a tiny mansion, actually. That's what
I love your tiny mansion.
Isn't that nice? Let's go to Mike in Albany. Mike, you're on.
Hi. My daughter recently is looking at a house, and this is not, it's in Vermont. It's an older house, 120, and it has an old steam system in it. It looks like it was originally just fireplaces that heated this place, and somewhere around 100 years ago, it looks like they put a steam system in running off of coal. And now it's, what do you call it, oil. And I'm just kind of wondering, does that really dramatically affect the house in the long run, or do you see people still buying old steam home systems like that and working them fine?
Well, you know, I think you said it's an old home as well.
Yeah, it's got to be at least 1890s.
You know, I think the one thing I would say is if it's oil and it's an old home and it's if it hasn't been updated and retrofitted, it's going to cost a lot to heat, you know. You know, some people like to purchase older homes for the charm and the historical features, but I think an older home that hasn't been updated with energy retrofits and has an old steam oil heat system is going to be costly in terms of energy use.
Now, there's another thing to add. There's six tenants in this home, and they all the current tenants include heat in their rent.
Right.
So I guess that's how they're mitigating the expense of heat is by just moving it through. But
yeah.
Well, you mean the tenants don't pay for their own heat. She pays for it.
Exactly right.
So they don't have incentive to conserve it.
Can't regulate it.
Right. Yeah. I was just going to say it's probably not something that's there's not separate utilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how old are the windows? How old is the roof? You know, the insulation. You look at the energy efficiency of the other components, and you know, it's already been switched over to the oil heat. Maybe you could add an extra oil heat. I mean, is it baseboard hot water heating? Is it forced hot air?
No, it's an old steam system. One pipe steam with the little regulators on the side that make noise and.
I don't know much about the property, but I wouldn't buy an investment property that's old, that's powered by oil heat that you can't control and that the tenants don't have to pay for.
Just do some due diligence, find out, see if you can get past records of what the heating bills look like. And, you know,
they disclosed all that.
Yeah.
But I was just wondering if people still rely on these old heating systems because, I don't know.
Well, you know, maybe find out how much a new system would cost and try to negotiate the heck out of this house.
That's
what I would do.
Mike, thanks for the call. I'm no expert on this stuff, but, you know, I'm told oil heaters, they have shorter lifespans than gas. I mean, gas can go a long time.
A little bit more maintenance, you know, you need because you do
more cleaning.
Yes.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Real Estate Today with Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis and Paul in Chesterfield, Mass. Paul, you're on.
Hi. My husband and I bought a house in the hill towns west of Northampton. And when we bought it, we had kind of intended it to be our forever home, and it's a bit of a fixer-upper. Now we realize we need to move. And my question is that we have certain things that have to be done to the house. It desperately needs a new roof. The kitchen is like a hand-built kitchen that's kind of really beat up, and the floors are beat up and stuff. And the problem with selling a house here is that they sit on the market for two or three lifetimes before they sell in this area. And so my husband and I have been debating whether or not we should put the house on the market before, during, or after these renovations. My attitude has been, let's do what we can to give it some really good curb appeal so that we can, you know, get people to the house. What do you guys think about that? You know, we've only owned the house about 6 years, so we don't have a lot of equity in it. Mm-hmm.
So when you purchased the home, did you get a good price on it based on the improvements that are needed?
Yeah, we got a good price on it.
Okay.
It was pretty reasonable. I think we bought the house for like $185.
Okay.
You know, it wasn't bad.
All right. So, I mean, I guess you have two options. You could just sell it as is, see where the market is on homes with similar condition to see if you would be in, you know, position it on the market so you're competitive with homes that look similar to you as far as condition. And as far as putting money into the home, I keep on saying condition does sell. I wouldn't do all of those renovations because you're not going to get all that investment back. So, you know, if you could just kind of a little facelift in the kitchen.
What about a roof that's badly in need of repair?
So the roof, you're probably going to get flagged on the inspection, or it's going to come up during the inspection anyhow, and you might need to negotiate it. I would say wait until that happens.
We originally negotiated that down as well.
Yes.
You know, so it's just gotten worse since then.
Right. Is it leaking? Yeah. Is it structurally not sound?
It's not leaking. The main part of the house has a couple layers of shingles on, and the top layer occasionally slides down and almost decapitates us on the deck.
Well, that's not good.
Nice. Nothing.
Well, that could be a safety.
How many times does that happen?
that would not be a good selling point.
No.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it's really that bad, I would say get some quotes and either fix the roof or offer a credit for that roof if you don't want to spend that expense if you don't have the money to do it. Alex?
Okay. Yeah, just be careful when you're on the porch there.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Paul, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. It's Real Estate. Let's grab one more before the next break, and we go to Tom in Skodak. Tom.
Good afternoon. How's it going today?
Good.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. I've got an odd question, and I'm not even sure there's an easy answer, but I built a house with my parents-in-law, and we called it sort of co-housing or multi-generational living. And the grandparents, we lived with it, and then our kids all on one level. They had their side, kitchen, living room. We shared a dining room, laundry, and living room, and everything flowed reasonably well. They've passed on. My daughter has rented the in-laws' apartment. It's not an apartment. It's actually fairly large. But we're looking at selling at this point, and I'm not sure of the market in the Capital District for that kind of atypical. It's not a two-family. It's actually very much shared. It's not locked off from each other. It all flows.
So it's got an in-law apartment. What can you just describe the in-law apartment again?
Well, it has a full kitchen, cathedral ceiling for that kitchen. There are a total of five bathrooms, eight bedrooms.
In the in-law apartment?
What about the in-law apartment?
No, in the entirety of the facility.
How many in-laws are in there?
7,000 square feet.
Well, it's a whole about 9,000.
9,000 square feet.
Wow,
that's a big house.
Yeah,
but the
total.
In-law apartment exactly, yeah. Can you describe that portion?
Sure. Mentioned the kitchen, yep. Bathroom, shower, no bath, or no tub, rather. They call it a den, but it had been a master bedroom. There's a second bedroom. There's a downstairs bedroom. There's a workshop underneath all that and an attached garage. That's the in-law's apartment.
Got it. And was there a bedroom for the in-law apartment, too? Yeah.
Two bedrooms. One
okay.
was basically the daughter converted it to a living area den, and there's the extra bedroom has just been used as their primary bedroom.
Yeah, I think.
And then a third one below.
There is a market.
Yeah, basement level.
There are buyers that are looking for in-law apartments. And now, it sounds like, though, this is also a much bigger house. So what's potential, the people who buy this house, you know, may use that apartment for potentially, if not family, maybe a nanny or an au pair.
Right.
Given the size of that house. But I think there is
a
market.
The structure is that it wouldn't, the market is odd because it would not be appropriate for either subdividing or making that a separate residence because of the design. It flows easily, so it's not a two-family
right.
home
so
in
that
sense.
So it's zoned as a single-family right. residential. Is that your zoning?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Single large family, perhaps.
Yeah, so I think the bigger issue may not be the in-law apartment. It's just the size of the home. You know, the market for 9,000
sure.
square foot homes
that
is
sounds
pretty
great,
small.
Though.
Yeah.
My gosh.
But Ray might be interested.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
All right, we'll sell you a little mini mansion.
Okay.
So, I mean, I do agree. I believe there is a big market for it. I think the multi-generational families are looking for that type of a home. You know, taxes would be my big question. What, you know, how high are they and what the assessment looks like.
They're as miserable as they are for everybody.
Yes. So that's, you know, that would be my biggest hiccup. You know, if we were having this conversation, like, what can we do to possibly reduce these? You know, it's tough. It's just a big home that somebody's going to have some big bucks to get in there.
And they're out there, right?
They have to be
patient.
They are.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Alex Renata, Real Estate, more of it on the way. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Real Estate Today. Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis are with us. And once again, the number is 800-348-2551. If you have a question about buying or selling a home, Dino in Orange County. Hello, Dino.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I don't know if I was mistaking, but I thought the topic was regarding tiny homes.
Somebody called about a tiny home. It's the first time, I think, on this real estate program we've ever taken a call about a tiny home.
Well, now you've taken a second one.
Well, all right.
I was just curious maybe if they could answer. I'm planning on doing a DIY tiny home build on a trailer. And I was wondering if they had any information on what I'd have to do to go about getting it RVIA certified.
What does that mean?
It's a recreational vehicle. It means that you can actually stay in an RV park with it.
Oh, cool.
Without the certification, I don't believe that you can park in an RV park.
That is so cool that you'd be doing that. That's great. And I don't think our guests have any blasted idea.
Honestly, I have no idea. As long as it's on wheels and as long as it's not massively huge, I would think that there is a way of getting that certification. I really cannot tell you where to start.
Why don't you just get a nice RV, man?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We really don't have them. Go ahead.
RVs just don't look like it. They don't feel like home.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is amazing.
You know, how high is it, too? I would think that, you know, most trucks and, you know, you have to be careful.
Yeah,
the underpasses.
Don't take it on the Sawmill Parkway. You know what I mean?
The regulations have to be 13.6, which is the standard tractor trailer height.
Yeah, okay.
8.5 feet wide.
Yeah.
And then your length depends on how far you want to go, I suppose. But I was under the impression that it had to do with the electrical and the plumbing work, that it actually had to be certified. I guess for safety reasons, but
it's probably
I know
more environmental as well. Yes, the septic.
Wouldn't
and
it be
sewage.
Cool though, pulling it into an RV park? You know, just like I am. Here's a real house. You know, it'd be amazing.
Oh yeah, yeah. There if you've never really seen them, fall down the rabbit hole on YouTube once.
Oh no, I've seen them. Well, good luck, man. And, you know, I just wouldn't want to catch a high wind on, like, the Mario M. Cuomo Bridge or whatever they're calling it these days. All right. Hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much.
Don't lose the trailer either.
Let's go to Jason in Albany. Jason.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Jason.
You're on.
Hi. Okay. My question is that my daughter owns a house in Albany, New York. So basically, there's no mortgage to it, and I would like her to transfer to us, my wife and I, to own it. And what is the easiest way and least cost to go about doing it?
Probably a quick claim deed.
Quick
claim deed. It's if there's no mortgage, very simple. Basically, she's going to give you ownership for one single dollar.
And no tax implications at all?
I'm not sure.
That's what I'm saying. If later on when we sell it, do we have to pay the capital gain or whatever you call it? Yeah.
Probably when you sell it, yes.
I think she can gift it to you, though. So it would.
I don't think the whole thing, though.
A daughter to a parent? Interesting.
I think the gift, you want to talk to you can talk to an accountant, but I think the gift exemption is pretty high. The annual gift exemption, lifetime gift exemption is pretty high.
Okay.
Okay. Now, what if she sold it to us at the same price that she bought it 2 years ago? I mean, she can sell a finance or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Then there would be.
How would that work?
You would pay there's a New York State transfer tax that you would pay.
It's $4 per thousand. And then
fine. I mean, yeah. I don't mind paying so that we own it.
Right.
Like we bought over from her, then she would not have any capital gain anywhere.
Correct.
She sold to us at the same price as, that she bought it 2 years ago. So.
Yeah, and you don't have capital gains typically on your primary residence if it's less than like $500,000 in profit.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the call very much. And if you have a tax dodge question, we would love to answer it here at 800-348-2551. This is from Tom. Tom writes, "What's the story with lawyers in the settlement of real estate in New York? I have experience in buying and selling real estate in Pennsylvania and Maryland, where lawyers are not required by law, but are used at the discretion of the buyer or seller, and in Delaware, where lawyers are required by law."
Yes, it's a fun state to do business in.
Really?
Yes. So you need a seller's attorney, you need a buyer's attorney, and you need a bank's attorney.
Is that overkill? Let's ask the real estate experts. Overkill?
Well, actually, you don't need an attorney's not legally required to buy or sell property. You can attempt to do it without an attorney, but I'm an attorney and I'm also a real estate broker. And when I have purchased and sold homes, I've hired an attorney.
Do you have to disclose that fact?
I don't know if I do, but I do.
But do you do it?
I do.
Okay, good.
The point is you're paying an attorney anywhere from $500 to $700 to assist you in the transaction. It's completely worth it. I consider it a small insurance policy.
Right. Because they're the ones that are handling the title, the deed, if anything's open on the title, they're the ones that are handling it. They have the vendors that help them get these things buttoned up.
Mm-hmm.
There's just too many disclosures in New York State
Are there too many disclosures in New York State?
Well, it's a disclosure upon a disclosure upon a disclosure, which, you know, who's being protected in whose best business interests. I just think that in this state, you would be a little silly not to use one. But that's just my opinion.
One, so.
Yeah. So most likely one side is going to have one. And it will put you maybe in a disadvantage, whether it's additional negotiations at an inspection or, you know, what do we do if there is title issues, you know, lenders.
But don't you have to have title insurance, though?
No,
you do not.
Just for the bank's portion.
For the bank's portion, which means, you know, contract to close, you're insured with the bank. Once you close on it, you don't. It's an optional. However, we highly recommend it this day and age just because of all the crazy, fraudulent people out there that are using internet and
people aren't honest.
Nice, yes,
that's
and
terrible.
Bad things happen.
Now, Tom's email indicates that Pennsylvania and Maryland are states where lawyers are not required. Have you heard horror stories about real estate issues there when you go to the real estate conventions and whatnot?
Not really. Florida doesn't use them. So
and everything seems
it's
fine.
It's just, I guess it's a matter of practice. You know, if the standard practice is that you're using them, you almost should use them because
yeah.
then you're just, it's not standard anymore and it complicates everything. And it's hard enough to get a contract to close
yeah.
with everybody involved.
I believe the states that don't use attorneys use an escrow agent, right?
Mm-hmm.
California, Florida. And the escrow agent is performing some of those roles that the attorney does in terms of researching the title, issuing the title policy, handling the deed transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think normally the escrow agent is kind of in the middle, and they, both buyer and seller, utilize the escrow agent in other states. Whereas we don't have an escrow agent, the attorneys essentially fill that role for each party.
Our number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a real estate question. Renata Lewis is here. Alexander Monticello is here. 800-348-2551. I'll just say this. Is there too much red tape and paperwork and layers of bureaucracy to sell or buy a home in New York State? Renata!
I was going to say the attorney shall go first. You know, it works. You know,
that is a cop-out answer.
It is not a cop-out answer. It's not an easy transaction. And, you know, we talk about for sale by owners. I want to do it by myself. Can you do it? Absolutely. Are you going to, you know, bump into a lot of walls hard? Yes, you will, because it's hard for us to get those transactions closed. There is a lot of people involved. There's a lot of vendors involved. There's a lot of voices that are out there. And if you don't have someone working on your behalf, it's going to be extremely difficult. And you will probably get hurt in one way or another.
Okay, that's diplomatic.
That's my
put.
Spiel.
All right. I'll buy it 50%. Alex, what do you have to say?
You know, if you want me to say something controversial,
yeah,
I'll
say something
say
controversial.
I think one of the things that should be changed in our industry is, I think the qualifications to become a real estate agent are too low, and I think they should be increased to improve.
Sure. Once you're in, I guess you can set the bar wherever you want, right? You're in.
Well, you can say that, but I think if we can make sure that we have a better trained profession, higher caliber real estate agents, I think it helps the consumer.
Do you run across people who really don't know what they're doing?
You know, unfortunately, I was at the ER and I ran into a doctor who didn't know what they were doing at the ER. We run into people who don't know what they're doing all day.
Hold it. Stop. let's just stop for a minute.
You better have ran.
You ran into an ER doc who had no idea what he was doing?
Yeah, that's another story.
Oh,
but,
my gosh. Yeah,
we'll see you
on Medical Monday next week.
To answer your question, Ray, yeah, unfortunately, I think there are people in every profession that don't know what they're doing. But the easier it is to get into the profession, I think, the more there's going to be people that don't know what they're doing.
Oh, you know, it's very easy to get into radio, oddly enough. Let's go to John in Albany. John, you're on.
Hi. I'm a banker here in the Albany market and have been a banker in New York State for over 30 years, but also have dealt with banking in states on our periphery. And my understanding about the need for an attorney in real estate transactions in New York is driven principally by banks. And one of the main reasons for that is New York State requires the payment of a mortgage tax in order to recognize the validity of the mortgage that the bank is putting on the residence or the piece of real property. So, and because of FDIC and other reasons where banks have to do due diligence and can't just give money away for their loans. The banks want to be certain that they absolutely positively have an ironclad security interest in that real property. So the way they do that is they make sure through a third party in some states, you know, one of your panelists talked about escrow agents in New York, typically attorneys are charged with making sure that the mortgage tax is collected and paid to New York State so that the mortgage can be recorded and recognized.
That makes a lot of sense. I've learned something
and
new.
And then because the bank has an attorney involved, everybody else wants to make sure that everybody understands what the bank's attorney is doing and what the documents say. So it's sort of escalating the need for attorneys. Not everybody has to have one, but, you know, to your most recent conversation about people being honest and people being competent, it's generally a good idea, I think, for all the parties to understand what all the words say.
Very well said.
And what I advise clients is, if you need an attorney, don't just get your brother-in-law who fixed your last speeding ticket. Get somebody who knows about the transaction that you're trying to do.
Correct. Great advice.
Great yes. advice. John, thanks yes. a lot for the call. Number here in the waning moments, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Any other trends we want to discuss here as we wrap up?
Yeah, so I want to say, so we were talking a little earlier about interest rates, everything's great. Why are we not selling more houses? I mean, I think we are selling a lot of houses, but why is there still kind of a pushback on some of the buyers? And I read a great article, and it was saying that the liquid money or the closing costs are still a very big challenge
yeah.
for a buyer to come into the table with. So even though the interest rates are lower, even though, you know, it, you know, we can get you a really good home, it's difficult for the first-time home buyers to get in because they just don't have the liquid funds.
Right.
So I think it'd be awesome if, you know, New York State, you know, came back with some type of an incentive or helps some of these first-time home buyers get into these homes.
Are you proposing a first-time home buyer credit, Renata?
Yes, okay, I am.
That's fine.
I would love it to come back.
Credits are all well and good, but that doesn't give you the chunk of change in your pocket to make the sale, to make the buy.
Well, yes and no. So, I mean, the last one I remember was it 5,000 or 10,000?
It was like, during the Obama administration,
yes.
right? There was like a $7,000 first
yes.
time home buyer tax
so
credit.
So basically, we're getting $7,000. Was it? I thought it was at closing, no?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so you, were
so you got that money
you
at closing.
You got that money
paid
at closing.
You could count on
so
it, and there it was.
A typical closing is anywhere between like $10,000 to $20,000
yeah.
liquid money. It's a lot of money.
There is a local agency here called the Affordable Housing Partnership, and I think we've talked about it before, where they do have grant money available up to $7,500 for
yeah.
first-time home buyers. You have to take a first-time home buyer class. You have to be pre-qualified, but it's called the Affordable Housing Partnership. There are income limits, though.
Right. I was going to say the income limits, and I know there's some banks that offer, you know, hey, bank with us, and, you know, we'll help you save X amount of money if you contribute X amount of money towards a house. So if you give them $5,000 towards a savings plan for a house, they will double that for you.
Well, that is where we will leave it today. And thank you to Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis, high-fiving as we
Woo-hoo.
Speak. Support comes from Paul Smith's College, the College of the Adirondacks, offering degrees in management, natural sciences, hospitality, forestry, psychology, and more. Paul Smith's College, it's about the experience. paulsmiths.edu. Assisted living at the Masry Residence at Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing seniors help with activities of daily living. Friends, family, community, 518-689-0453 for information and tours. Lakeview Orchard, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. Apples, peaches, pumpkins, winter squash, apple cider, cider donuts, kapusta, galumpki, pierogi, kielbasa. LakeviewOrchard.com. Wow, Renata's excited. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving the Berkshires, Pioneer Valley, and all of Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. Thanks again to Alex and Renata for being here. Thank you for listening. Zach Malloy, our engineer. Kayleen White took the calls. Jim Lavula is our producer. Tomorrow, more good stuff on Vox Pop. We'll welcome Dr. Katie Lewis. Right now, stand by for The Book Show.